Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with less heat than Kyle Hendricks. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and we're cold.
Yes, Jake. Good morning. It is Tuesday morning, January 16th. We took MLK Day off, and now we are here. And as you mentioned, what a tribute to the Cubs rotation. My humble abode here in Richmond, Indiana, deciding, you know what, heat overrated. I am freezing my tuchus off, Jake Mintz. While my heat is working, my windows do not. And it went below zero here in Indiana this weekend. A little bit different than St. Thomas and the Virgin Islands. Quite a moment of temperature whiplash, but I'm doing okay. And I will warm up here with this podcast with you. Good morning.
The good news is that there is nothing going on in the baseball world of note. But if there's one thing you know about Baseball Barbacast, about Jake Mintz and Jordan Schusterman, is that we will always have things to talk about. So do not worry. On this show, we're going to be digging into the NL Central because that has piqued our interest over the last couple of days. Jordan Hicks going to the Giants, along with a huge free agent signing that we'll get to. And then we're going to go through some quick hitters and talk about a lot of the maybe the smaller free agents left on the market. Remember, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. And that's the intro for the show. Jordan, over the weekend, CubsCon, which is not a list of downsides to the Cubs. It's not CubsCons.
No.
It's not a bunch of Ponzi schemers.
Quite the opposite in terms of what the purpose of the event is a lot of positivity, right? We're trying to tell you what's great about the Cubs. Cubs should be called Cubs Pro.
Cubs Pro. It's basically like the Cubs Con is, I think, the biggest con.
Certainly feels like it.
Yeah. Biggest con since Bernie Madoff. It does feel like the purpose of Cubs Con is, it almost feels like a political dictator is like... like running for office in quotes, like running for office. And it's like the thing to get everybody moving in the right direction.
It's great. But Cubs fans, whether they are frustrated or having the time of their lives, they give a shit.
They post.
And people show up. And as we talked about with their promotional poster last week, there's a lot of people there. They do a good job at basically bringing in every possible person, whether they were just acquired in the case of Michael Busch, who was traded for and showed up at CubsCon, or Shota Imanaga, who had his introductory press conference essentially to kick off the Cubs convention, or, you know, past Hall of Famers, current players, front office, the whole shebang. So it is a very packed, everyone is involved. And what we get is they do a good job of organizing so many different things is that we get to hear from a lot of different Cubs, including current players. And in the case of this weekend, there was someone who was the star of the show who was not actually there. And that was Cody Bellinger, who kind of loomed over the proceedings in a way that Scott Boras could only super appreciate. Because people like Dansby Swanson openly lobbying for Cody Bellinger's return at every possible, opportunity when a microphone was in his hand. So it was a very interesting kind of tone because, again, the Imanaga signing, I think, brought some energy into the proceedings because there was already like the Cubs. Remember, they had done nothing. They were the only team that had not acquired a major league player until the Busch trade and the Imanaga signing for the whole winter. So Cubs fans are getting antsy. They get those two moves, but they still want more. And did you see the quote from Jed Hoyer about where they are at in their offseason? Because this, I think, really kind of opens things up.
He said they're in the fifth inning.
Yeah, we're in the fourth or fifth inning of our offseason. And now that's both exactly what everybody wants to hear, but also maybe a little bit you're giving yourself more pressure.
My take, so I'm very conflicted about that because we as media people want honesty from front office people. Right. We want openness. We want transparency. But so often you have these people over-promising and under-delivering. We had the Mike Elias liftoff. We have the Red Sox full throttle. Right. don't make promises that you can't keep. And so, like, there's a shot that the Cubs just enter spring with this team, and then Jed Hoyer has to be like, yeah, you know, it was the fifth inning for everyone's offseason. It was the middle of the offseason.
It was a shortened game. It was just it was a rain shortened game.
But just because it's the fifth inning doesn't mean you're going to score again.
Right. Right. Exactly. And maybe that's the question about this Cubs team. A fitting analogy in that sense. As we look at this lineup and we think, okay, yeah, sure. Now, again, in the NL Central, we're going to open this up to a little bit of a bigger thing. But before we open it up to the larger NL Central conversation, let's talk about Cody Bellinger and the Cubs match in particular. Now, this is not an uncommon thing, right? Player is, you know, a beloved free agent, team wants to come back. Now, this is a little bit different, right? Because this isn't a situation like Aaron Judge where he's born and raised a Yankee, right? All these things. Like, no. This dude was there for 1 year and he was really good. And the Cubs were fine. It's not like he carried them to some great postseason run. Like, he was just a really, really good player for them in a bounce back season in what was meant to be exactly what Cody Bellinger wanted, which is find a comfortable place to rebound and then go back to the open market and absolutely cash in. Now, it does seem like he enjoyed himself in Chicago. It does seem like his teammates very much appreciate them. I don't doubt that any of that is fault. Like, I don't think it's bullshit. Like, I do believe, like, Dansby Swanson and his teammates really want Cody Bellinger back, because baseball players in particular, the teammates, they don't care about the contract. Like, they sure, they can say it's a business, but for the most part, they're like, yeah, I want my friend to be on the team again, and he was pretty good for us. So that, it's very simple from their perspective.
But the issue with Cody Bellinger and how he fits into this roster is that even with Cody Bellinger on the team, I have doubts about how good they are. Their payroll right now is at $187 million. With Bellinger presumably getting around 25 to 30 a year, that's going to send it to around 210, 215. That's high. Now, all of these are self-imposed restrictions. I understand that. I don't anticipate the Cubs going up to 250, at least right now. And I don't know if the team as currently constructed, they're far from a juggernaut. They're not that intimidating. They would be then running it back with basically the same squad they had last year, plus Imanaga. And that team won, what, 82 games?
Yeah. No, exactly. They had a long way to go. And just bringing Bellinger back doesn't necessarily put them in the status of any sort of the best teams in the National League. They're nowhere close to that. Now, again, as we'll talk about it in the context of the NL Central, it still might be good enough to win the division. But I totally hear what you're saying. At the same time, there are not a lot of options out there, right? I mean, you could argue they are better off spending a smaller amount on Matt Chapman and having the greatest defensive infield we've ever seen, and then maybe adding another pitcher or adding another reliever, right? Maybe you bring in a higher-end reliever like a Robert Stevenson or even Josh Hader or something like that. That would be another way to spend the money. This has been true for every team looking to add offense this winter. Not a lot of options. And so unless you're going to, I don't know, like trade Morel, sign Jorge Soler, like there, I guess there's some creative options here. Cody Bellinger still makes them better. Like I do believe that. And so I don't obviously care how much the Rickets are spending, and most Cubs fans don't either. And so from that perspective, I think that's why they view it as such a good fit, because fans just view it as, it looked great. Like, he was on my team and it worked. So I would like that to continue. And in that sense, I don't blame fans or his teammates for feeling that way. It just, they are in a spot where I'm sure Jed Hoyer is like, at the same time, I might rather just be like, listen, sure, we are probably going to add more. That's why I say it's the fourth inning of the offseason. But also, maybe I don't want it to be Cody Bellinger. Maybe I would rather it be a few other things, because I still believe that this team is good enough to compete in this division that is still pretty mid.
If they win the division next year with the same roster, Craig Counsell. Whew. I'm already jazzed up about his ability to squeeze 13 more wins out of the exact same team.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, no pressure on that. And to your point about, right, Jed saying fourth or fifth thing, I mean, at least in this case, right, the full throttle comments was Tom Werner, and then Breslow's the one that ends up having to execute. I mean, Jed Hoyer is the one, in theory, making these claims. He's like, bring it on. And it does feel like Jed kind of has, he really is embracing, you know, being that dude. And he'll take it on, you know, for better or for worse. So I'm excited to see what that means. Again, there's only so many options left. We are assuming it will just be Bellinger or Chapman or whatever. Maybe it will be something we are not anticipating. The other part of this conversation, too, is that the Cubs have a very good farm system right now. And they do have a good amount coming that's maybe closer than we think. Guys like Matt Shaw, who they just drafted, but they have a lot of other guys that have kind of arrived at the higher levels. Also, remember, like, they have PCA. And Peter Armstrong did not, I know he obviously did not get a hit in the big leagues last year, but like that's not someone that they necessarily want to immediately block with a massive contract. And if they believe, if they still believe that PCA can be a good major league player right away, that's a whole lot cheaper than Cody Bellinger. And I can understand that.
And you didn't get a hit in the major leagues last year either.
Right.
So who are you to open your mouth? That's all I'm saying.
No, we're on equal playing field. And Mike Tauchman is still hanging out there. People still love him.
He's fine.
You know.
Sure. It's so interesting looking at this team, thinking about this team and the Cubs returning to contention. And it's impossible not to compare it to the 2015, 16, 17, 18 teams, right? Mm-hmm. First thing, when the Cubs tore it down, they got a lot of flack. That decision looks great right now. This team would not be competitive if it was built around Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and Javier Baez, right?
Right. Of course. Absolutely.
But what's different is when that team was coming together, it was pretty obvious where it was all coming from, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you just looked at the farm system and you were like, wow, there's five hitters and I guess they all hit. Like, they all popped, really. I guess Rizzo was more of a trade, I understand. Mm-hmm. But like, for this team, it feels kind of hodgepodged together in a different way. I would be curious to hear from Cubs fans about like how they perceive this group compared to that group. Now, obviously nothing will live up to the team that broke the curse. I get that. But just the experience of seeing their club kind of return to contention with an amalgamation of players that feels a little bit more taped together. Not to say that it's a bad roster. Again, you said it's fine. It's just kind of a different experience, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you think about it, the standpoint of just like who are the foundational pieces, I count four, you know, written in, you know, carved in stone, right? It's Horner,
Nick Madrigal.
It's Mastroboni.
Miles Mastroboni. Yeah,
exactly. No, it's Horner, Happ, Suzuki, and Swanson, right? Like those are the four that you are 1,000,000% sure are clearly, they are, that is the Cubs, right? And those are four very, very good players. Now, if any of those are your best player, is that a team that is going to win the World Series? I don't know. Maybe, but I don't know. And even if you extend it to the pitching staff, right? Steele, it's really just Steele, Imanaga, and then, you know, Wicks, we'll see. These guys have to still prove it. But that next wave, I think, will tell us. You know, when we're having this conversation a year from now, maybe it is clear that Michael Bush is that, right? Maybe they did give Christopher Morel enough playing time at enough positions that he did appear to be that. Maybe it is a guy like Matt Shaw. Maybe it is PCA, right? But those four are a really good starting point. It's just, it's not, it doesn't look like the super duper top end rosters where you're like, holy shit, they have that guy.
Like, have you seen the Dodgers roster recently? Yeah. Have you taken a look at it?
Yeah. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. And by the way, and again, even if they brought back Cody Bellinger, I would put him right in that same group as Horner, Happ, Suzuki, Swanson, where it's like, those are really good players. I'm not like, that's one of the best players in baseball. So again, maybe like of those guys, like I guess Swanson, could you imagine? Suzuki, by the way, was one of the best hitters in baseball in the second half last year. Like there's versions of these guys that are maybe I'm not giving them enough credit. And I'd still rather have those guys than not have them. But that's what makes this Cubs roster interesting, on top of the fact that, of course, the pitching is a little bit shakier, I would say, even if there are some good pieces there.
Let's pivot to the Cubs' best friends, the St. Louis Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Travel down route. Do you know the number?
No.
I-55. Go down 55. Mm-hmm. And the St. Louis Cardinals have had a very funny offseason where they Signed three pitchers over the age of 34 in Sonny Gray, Kyle Gibson, and Lance Lynn within the span of basically a week, and have done nothing else.
Yeah.
However, ownership.
They traded Tyler O'Neill away.
Yeah. Which is, for them, in their minds, probably addition by subtraction.
Yes.
But ownership believes that they have done enough to get butts in seats for 2024. This is from John Denton, who covers the St. Louis Cardinals for MLB.com. This is a quote from yesterday. St. Louis Cardinals president Bill DeWitt on 2024 ticket sales. Quote, we're actually pretty happy so far with our ticket sales. Right out the gate, we started a little slow. And then John Mozeliak made those pitching moves, and that really bolstered interest in the team. So, a couple things. One, the Cardinals, there's always interest. Like they could
I was going to say. Cardinals fans were showing up last year, even to boo, right?
Even
in,
to boo.
In August and September.
They roll up. Right. They could have signed you and me and whomever the hell. Mm-hmm. And they people would show up. That's the first thing we know. I just love the idea that some Cardinals season ticket holder, longtime fan, who's on the fence about renewing the ticket plan, opens up the morning paper at his he's drinking his coffee. He's got his bowl of bran and he sees that the Cardinals signed Kyle Gibson, slams his paper down, and he says, by Jove, I need to be at the bush. And he picks up his phone, and he calls the Cardinals, and he says, one season tickets, please.
Maybe, most generous interpretation, you know, someone who just loves Mizzou, right? Kyle Gibson, a Mizzou alum. Maybe there's someone that had the special Mizzou Cardinals, you know, double whammy and was like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. Or, you know, we joke about Lance Lynn, who was, of course, not a good pitcher last year, gave up 5,000 home runs. But like Lance Lynn, I imagine there were some people in St. Louis that absolutely fucking love Lance Lynn and don't give a shit or know how many home runs he allowed in 2023. And they're like, Lance Lynn's back? Hell yeah. Like, that's the kind of guy that I want to have out there on the mound, not the scrubs we were given innings to in 2023. So, and then Sonny Gray's just a good pitcher. So it's like, okay, cool. We got Sonny Gray.
There's some Cardinals fan dusting off the Lance Lynn jersey that's been in the basement. Mm-hmm. It's like, now that's a real pitcher. That's a real American pitcher, man.
But here's
he's
going
to go out there and gobble innings.
As we, again, we get the ticket sales stuff. Listen, Cardinals fans are going to show up. That's fine. And good for them. That's why they are indeed. Yeah. They are very good fans. We accept that. But also, like, the rhetoric around the team in general has been like, okay, we got to get pitching. They did that. They got three pitchers. We can argue about the quality of those three pitchers, but they did acquire three major league adult pitchers, which they said they were going to have to do. Some of that is replacing guys that were obviously leaving like Wainwright, and some of that is just trying to upgrade. But also the other rhetoric has been, I believe I saw another quote from ownership at some point where it's like, maybe it was Mozeliak. It was basically like, yeah, like we can all have a bad year. Like bad years do happen, although they literally had not happened to the Cardinals in, you know, decades. But like, it can't happen again, right? And so I do think that fans, and even me, I pull up this roster, I'm like, yeah, that this lineup should be fucking awesome. Like, I'm watching Jordan Walker going around the Cardinals caravan, whatever, and I'm like, that dude could just be an all-star this year. I know that he, you know, there was some up and down. Okay, he's got some launch angle issues. He's 21. And when he's like, this is still a really, really good offensive team. And if the pitching can improve a little bit, like, I feel better. They have more guys. Again, comparing them to the Cubs, maybe I'm giving them too much credit because Goldie and Arenado are maybe past their primes. But I still look at a team where I'm like, okay, this team can have some of the best players in the league in a very real way.
It's also an incredibly entertaining lineup, 1-9. Mm-hmm. Brendan Donovan is the, you know, probably the most boring guy on this team, and he's just Swiss Army knife, totally solid. But Goldschmidt's interesting. Mm-hmm. He is the most boring elite hitter, but he's still an elite hitter and it's still fun to watch. Nootbaar, Arenado, Contreras, Nolan Gorman and his biceps, 21-year-old Jordan Walker, Tommy Edman slash and dash, and then Mason Wynn, who was one of the worst hitters in baseball last year. I'll watch that.
Yeah, we know he's going to be fun to watch on defense. And if he's going to try also 21, like try and figure out if they are going to actually give him the keys to be the shortstop, like that is compelling whether or not it goes well. So again, I'm sure there are Cubs fans listening to this being like, this is bullshit. Like, there's no way they're that much better than the Cubs. And that's fine. Like, I it's even, right? There's a reason we are talking about it this way. But this team doesn't suck. Like we were all in the same way that, you know, people enjoy the Yankees, you know, failures. Like, I hope you all enjoyed the Cardinals while they were down, because it was a bizarre and strange thing that we have never really seen in this generation. But I would not anticipate that to be repeated. I would be very, very, very surprised.
Okay. Even if I were to take the Cardinals 26 over the Cubs 26, I think Chicago's pitching depth in the rotation, once everyone gets hurt, which happens every year, mm-hmm. it's not just your best five pitchers, right? It's your best eight. And I really trust Chicago's sixth, seventh, and eighth best pitcher in their organization over the Cardinals. Yeah. And I think like that over the long run is kind of an important deal.
Yeah. And the Cardinals, I mean, that's the other thing though, is they also, you just referenced the tear down the Cubs made. Now that obviously was much more emotionally charged with the players involved, but the Cardinals kind of nailed some of these trades they just made. And we're going to see some of the guys, whether it's Tekoa Roby, whether it's Thomas Ajayi, like, they look like they did really well in some of these deals that they just made for players that don't necessarily mean as much to them as the Rizzos and the Baezes and the Bryants. And so that, I think that from a depth perspective is going to help them compete. I think those guys could be relevant in 2024 also.
Until I see a Cardinals pitcher in the big leagues throwing over 92, I will hold all judgment. Let's move on to the Milwaukee Brewers, who actually won this division last year. People are easy to forget. People forget quickly. They have had what I would call a bummer of an offseason. They went from loving Craig Counsell to spray painting ass on his high school sign. He is now in charge of the Chicago Cubs in the dugout. I was on the phone yesterday, Jordan, with a longtime buddy of mine who is a Cubs fan who I hadn't talked to in a while. I was like, how are you feeling about the Counsell stuff? And he's like, awesome. It's like, Milwaukee, don't even know where that is. And so the Brewers are in a very interesting position where there were rumors that once they lost Counsell that they were going to kind of tear it down, that they were going to trade away Willy Adames and Corbin Burns, and they were going to plan for the future. They seem a little bit caught in between, but I'm going to be honest with you, Jordan. I actually don't mind the way that they've approached this offseason, because one of two things is going to happen. Either they're going to be more competitive than we think, because the Brewers always seem to be more competitive than we think. And if they're not, because the secret sauce really was Craig Counsell and they can't maintain it with a new skipper in Pat Murphy, then they can trade Willy Adames and Corbin Burns at the deadline and they can get stuff back for them then. Mm-hmm. So I think that this team is kind of whatever, but they are giving themselves options just in case some of the younger players like Sal Frelick, Garrett Mitchell, and even like Bryce Turang take a little bit of a step forward.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, the thing that I keep thinking about the Brewers is like, the day the season ended, we were like, watch out. This Brewers team is set up for a deep run, right? All of their pitchers seem to be running into form until the first day of the playoffs when they were like, oh yeah, by the way, Brandon Woodruff's hurt. And since that moment, they got their ass whooped by the D-backs, which, of course, they weren't the only ones. But still, they were the first ones to get the snakes alive ass kicking.
They were the trailblazers.
Yes, exactly. They really set the tone for everybody else. They're like, yeah, no, the D-backs are good. But from the moment that Woodruff was announced as injured, it's just been this weird slip into, oh my God, like, are the Brewers never going to be the same again? And that could still be true before spring training. That could still be true at the deadline, all those things. But it is clearly a matter of kind of holding on and saying, listen, even with this extremely young lineup in particular that we could potentially be rolling out there, which will likely include Jackson Churio on opening day after they signed him to an extension, right? With him, with, you know, Garrett Mitchell, who was looking good until he got injured, Turang, Sal Frelick, like, at the same time, I mean, it's not hard to see this team once again struggling to score runs. And if the depth isn't there, because at the very least we know Woodruff isn't going to be there. I still love Freddie Peralta. I still like Burns. This team will be fine. It's hard to imagine this team being bad, but it's pretty thin margins. And if those margins were Craig Counsell, I agree with you. I don't mind how they've approached it. But I'm looking at this roster too, and it is a lot easier to see how this team could be, you know, closer to 75 than 85 wins in a hurry.
Great Rhys Hoskins, Brandon Belt landing spot here.
Yes.
Very skeptical they'll spend that kind of cash.
Yes. But like, again, it's like, oh, they have to cut. And I know it's more of a, they're at their end of their contract. So it's like, it just makes sense to flip an Adamas, to flip a Burns. I mean, man, they're right now, their projected payroll is 105. Like, if they're trading those guys, they're going to be down in like the bottom five. And maybe that's, listen, it is Milwaukee. It is, they have acted like a mid-market team as a small market team for the most part, right? With some of the extensions that they made, and credit to them, right? But if we're really cutting back to this degree, that's troubling. But at the same time, they have some exciting young stuff. Maybe Churio just wins Rookie of the Year. Like, there is some exciting stuff going on in Milwaukee, but it is, I still do think this is a transition year almost no matter what, because it's not like they're extending Corbin Burns or Willy Adames. So I do think this team is going to look pretty different pretty soon.
Last team to talk about in the NL Central that isn't the Pirates, and that's the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah.
Who you are intimately familiar with, considering you can walk. You could walk from where you're sitting
right now. It wouldn't be fun, but it certainly would be easier than any other team.
You could walk. It would take you hours and hours and hours, but you could do it in one day. Cincinnati Reds have had quite an odd offseason where they were receiving criticism before this year for being frugal and not spending money. And this offseason, this winter, they have spent some coin, but they have done it in a very odd way. Their four highest paid players on their roster right now are all free agent signings that happened over the last couple months. Frankie Montas is the highest paid Cincinnati Red, making $14 million. Jaime Candelario is the second. He's making $13 million. Nick Martinez is making $14 million. And Emilio Pagan is making $8 million. Besides that, the highest paid Red is Hunter Green, who is making $3.333333333 million a year. What is up with this club?
I think they've gotten better in very strange ways. Obviously, you didn't look at this team and be like, you know what this team needs? They need an infielder. that's what they did, signing Jaime Candelario. And I just think that they've gotten better. They've basically, not overcorrected, but looked at how the second half of their season went, where their pitching injuries sunk them and they were starting Ben Lively and Luke Weaver and all of these guys, or guys that were being called, Levi Stout, guys that were basically being called up to make their major league debut in extremely unfavorable circumstances. And that's pretty much what sunk their season. They were still in it. Like, the last weekend, they were still mathematically alive. Like, they were right there. They proved themselves as a competent, solid team in adding these pieces. I mean, Nick Martinez and Candelaria in particular are the definition of floor raisers, right? Montas is more of an interesting swing, believing that he can get back to his pre-shoulder injury self, which is, I think, questionable, especially when you see that the pitching depth that they sort of do have. But if they're thinking, we don't get to access this kind of high-end talent very often, they're not signing Blake Snell, obviously. And if they believe that Frankie Montas can be some version of that, then giving him a 1-year deal like that, like, I know we're low on Montas, but like, okay, that's fine. But Candelaria and Martinez are exactly what we're looking for in terms of, let's just scoot this floor a little bit higher, give our young players an opportunity to take steps forward. They're also probably going to take steps back, which is also why you want veterans like Martinez and Candelario. I'm really bullish on a lot, because I think what they have is a really, really good balance. Now, they don't have the they still don't have the financial flexibility to cover up any mistakes here. And so that's why they're going to have to hit a lot of these guys, and the player development is really going to have to succeed with these young pitchers and young hitters. Promising stuff so far. I really like what they've done. Would I pick them to win the division right now? No, but like, they are in a... We've seen enough from them. How good I think Matt McClain is, how good I still think Ellie can be. Like, there's some really, really exciting stuff going on with the Reds, but just still too much unknowns with how young the roster is in terms of what we know for sure. And that's the same thing with Milwaukee, but I think with the Reds as well.
Do you think they're going to trade Jonathan India or no?
Man, again, like, it seems to have only gotten more likely, and Nick Kroll's been very consistent. It feels like a trade would be good for both sides. It's just his trade value is, I mean, it's 3 years left, but some people just look at Jonathan India and think he sucks. I don't think he sucks. I think he is a good player. He is a flawed player in some regards. I don't think so. I really don't think so. Like, I think it just doesn't line up. What they view him as, which is weird because they're clearly not relying on him as an everyday second baseman anymore because they don't need to, but they still value him way higher than it seems like the teams that are interested in him do. And I think that is going to have them go into camp with a very crowded position player group, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It is an odd situation, though. I understand people looking at that and thinking, why is he still on the team?
Let's pretend to talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates, who we are not bullish on, don't feel good about where they're at. They haven't done enough this winter to change anything significantly. They did go out and get Martin Perez and Marco Gonzalez, and I guess Rowdy Tellez, but that's not really moving the needle. This is still definitively the fifth best team in the division. They have not had young players come up and make huge contributions at the big league level. Yes, O'Neill Cruz missed all of last season, most of last season after his leg went kablooey, but unless he comes back and it is like an 8-win player and Henry Davis is like a 5-win player, it's kind of hard to see how this team competes at the top of the division.
Yeah.
But Jordan, let me ask you the question this way. If the Pirates finish in fourth, who finishes in fifth? Who's most likely to finish behind the Pirates?
I think Milwaukee. I do. I think I still would say Milwaukee, just because it has to just be one of the other young. Like, it's just the Cubs and Cardinals are just too old, in my opinion, in a good way, to be that bad. Again, I know we just watched the Cardinals be that bad, but to me, it's just the Reds or Brewers young guys just going in the wrong direction, and the Brewers making trades from their veterans that they have and just being like, listen, we still believe in our future. This isn't a full rebuild because our young guys are in the major leagues already, and we have Churio and we have other guys coming up, and now we have Tyler Black and now we have Mizorowski. Like, we're not in a rebuild, but like this year we're just too young and it's not happening. And if the Reds, who had whatever 500 rookies last year, if more than half of them have sophomore slumps, you could see some issues, and the pitching is injured again. Like, you could see some issues there, but I think I still lean Milwaukee. I think I do.
Are we giving the Cardinals too much credit? I mean, they finished 5 games worse than Pittsburgh last year. Like, the distance between St. Louis and Pittsburgh was essentially the same as Pittsburgh and Cincinnati last year.
Okay, that's true. That's true. And I do think that, like, I think, move the Cardinals aside for a second. The Pirates winning 76 games, like, that doesn't sound like one of the worst teams in baseball in the way that we're sort of talking about them. And in that sense, I think that's a fair point, right? Cardinals, I'm moving aside. For the Pirates, it's like, do I think they can win 76 again? Yeah, I think so. But again, I want to see. That's why so much is on O'Neill Cruz. I love Brian Hayes, and Reynolds is fine. I need O'Neill Cruz to just go ham. Like, that's in terms of like who is this future superstar, especially on offense. Great. Maybe we get Paul Skeens, right? Maybe Skeens just comes up and wins Rookie of the Year. Like, that's great. I like a lot of the pitching they have in their farm system, but offensively, it is not an intimidating group right now. And so maybe some of those guys develop to be that, but that's where I'm stuck at with Pittsburgh. Not to mention, as you compare them to Cincinnati, who's thrown some money around, Pittsburgh continues to do the exact opposite.
Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we will talk about Jordan Hicks and quick hit some of the remaining free agents. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman, Jordan Hicks. Jordan, what do you remember about Jordan Hicks?
What do I remember about Jordan Hicks?
Yeah, the singer.
We're doing his like Hall of Fame candidacy now.
Yeah.
What do I remember about him? Here's what I remember about him. He wasn't a very compelling or successful starting pitcher. There's a place to start for this conversation. As the San Francisco Giants have signed Jordan Hicks to a 4-year, $44 million deal. And as I described when I wrote in the little blurb for Fox Sports, like, Giants signed Jordan Hicks for a bunch of money. Least surprising. Like, all of that checks out. Even though Jeff Passan gave it the all caps breaking, I was not taken off guard. I was like, yes.
You were not broke.
Nope. I was like, yep. Good. Nice. Cool. And then Jeff was like, he will go to camp as a starting pitcher. And I was like, why? Now, let me also remind everyone that we did the same thing with Reynaldo Lopez earlier in the offseason. I don't know what the status of that is in Atlanta since they've obviously acquired Chris Sale and whatnot. But what do you make of this? Like, is it as simple as, hey, let's just give it a try because, you know, maybe our coaches can get him to throw strikes and have a third good pitch and blah, blah, blah. And who cares? Because at the worst case scenario, he's just back in the seventh or eighth inning. Like, I guess that's true, but it is a strange, in the context of the Giants offseason in particular, this is a strange bit of news, in my opinion.
Jordan, you never played, okay? You would never understand
it's true.
What it's
Explain
like
it to me, please.
To be a reliever and to have everyone think that you're just a reliever and that you're nothing more than a reliever, that you can't throw more than one inning at a time. There's a level of pride in this, okay? Jordan Hicks clearly thinks of himself as a starter. If he was out to dinner and like met a mutual friend of his significant other, they're like, oh, what do you do? He would say, I'm a starting pitcher. Okay. That's how he views himself. And he believes that he was not given the opportunity to do that in St. Louis. A fair and long enough runway to do that. Now, I would look at the numbers and say that he did. I would disagree with him.
Yeah.
I don't think he can be an elite starter or an above average starter. I think he could be a fine back end starter, right? However, it is in the Giants' best interest to give him the opportunity to start because they can move him back to the bullpen if they need to. If he becomes a reliever, this contract is totally fine. If he's an impact reliever making, what is it, like 11 a year? That's totally fine if he's an impact reliever, which we know he can be. If he's able to start and he's a fine starter, then 11 a year for a fine starter is also great. And I would imagine that the Giants were able to get Jordan Hicks in the building because they told him that they would give him the chance to start. Right. And they're going to see that through because they want to keep their guy happy if he's going to be around for four more years. And if it doesn't work, you just move him back to the rotation. There's not really a whole lot of downside in it for me, unless they give him too much leash in the rotation where he, you know, we pick our heads up in June and he has 15 starts and an ERA over 48 and like gets a catastrophe. Sure. But I understand how from Jordan Hicks's perspective, he's like, I'm a starter. I want to start.
I understand. I agree with everything you say. The one thing I would say, I would add is like, first of all, it does seem like the reporting is that Jordan Hicks, especially from like St. Louis people who were kind of reacting to this being like, he got his chance. Like, it does seem like he did actually want to start, right? Like, this is something that he was seeking in free agency, in addition to probably a longer contract than what you're normally going to give. Now, of course, he's a very young free agent at 27. Here's my issue. If he is, and this is what I tweeted, like, if him and Robbie Ray are like the plan A for improving the rotation, that's not good enough for me, right? I agree there's no downside. And like, if he ends up falling back into the bullpen for $11 million a year, like him and Doval, like that's sick. Like, that's a pretty sweet bullpen. That's why I was like, okay, great. Like, let's not complicate this. To put Jordan Hicks in the bullpen, this could be a pretty nasty bullpen, right? But I understand. So I understand pursuing it, but man, like that can't be. He's currently penciled in like the Fangraphs projected rotation right now: Logan Webb, Ross Stripling, Kyle Harrison, Jordan Hicks, Keaton Wynn. Keaton Wynn kind of nasty, by the way. But like, I don't know. That's where I'm struggling with it. Is it's like, if we're really just saying, all right, well, Robbie Ray will come back and we got Jordan Hicks as a starter. Like, if you're the Giants and we're trying to make big strides here, that can't be it. Now, if you go ahead and also sign Montgomery or Snell, cool. You know, and Jordan Hicks is more in that five spot competing with some of the younger guys in a way that we can more easily kind of get him out. But as long as he's in the middle of the rotation where it looks like you are relying on him, that's my issue, right? Giving it a try, we'll see. I mean, I'm going to enjoy watching it. The dude's one of the hardest throwers in the world. Arguably, he's one of the few guys who can say, I am the hardest throwing pitcher on planet Earth. He can say that with a straight face, and you can't tell him he's wrong, right? That's a very short list.
That's what he would say if he met someone at a dinner.
Yeah, I would lead with that, regardless of starting and relieving.
Here's what I would say. I'm one of the hardest throwing podcasters on Earth, I think. Do you think right now I'm in the 99th percentile of podcast velocity?
Hardest throwing or just podcast velocity?
Like, no, like podcasters with fastball velocity.
Ooh. Oh.
Because they're obviously like the former players.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. And Trevor May, I don't think, has a podcast yet.
Yeah, like Trevor Hildenberger does, but John Doolittle's doing a pod. But like,
okay.
I understand so, that. But you also have to think, how many podcasts are there in the world?
And then how many of them are former big league pitchers? Still, I mean, you know, unfortunately, I think probably too many.
I think I'm throwing right now 75. And I think that's in the 99th percentile.
That might be 99th percentile. I think you might be onto something. Yeah. Just I feel good about 95th percentile. Yeah.
Think about how many podcasters
have
never thrown a baseball.
We're just saying podcasts, not just baseball podcasts.
No, yeah, I'm saying podcasters. I'm in the 99th percentile of fastball velocity for all podcasts.
It's a great question.
I think there's a chance you're in like the 92nd.
That's what I'm saying. I think I'm in like this 80. My Savant slider is red. I don't know how red.
Yeah.
But it is red.
Email us, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com.
Great question.
How many podcasters are you sure throw harder than me?
And then, yes, give us some names. I'm sure we're forgetting some obvious ones. All right.
Jordan Hicks, please don't start a podcast.
But by the way, here's the other thing. It's like, okay, like Ryan Spielberg's, right? Not even former pitchers. Like there are other former players that probably can still throw harder than you. I'm not saying this is kicking you out of the 99th percentile. I'm just saying that like velocity is velocity. You don't know, I mean, it is what it is. So I just want to add that to consideration.
Do you think Ryan Spielberg's throws harder than me right now?
I don't know.
I think he does. Spilly's 44.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he does. I think he does. Yeah.
Okay.
But whatever. I just wanted to add that for consideration. It doesn't necessarily have to be former pitchers. Well, let alone like maybe there's some like javelin throwers out there. Or even like football players, you know, like there's other people that have velo.
That's you know, true.
That's my point. There's other people that have velo. It's not just pitchers. There you go. I just want to throw that back out there for the people that are going to email us. So just keep that in your consideration.
I heard Driveline is getting into the true crime genre. So if we see some true crime podcasters getting up into the mid-80s, then I got to start shaking in my boots.
You got trouble. All right. BaseballRubberCast@gmail.com. Let us know. All right. That's the Giants. Oh, one more Giants move.
Huge more, free agent. The Giants have struggled. They have struggled for years to land the big fish. First, Giancarlo Stanton said, no thanks. Then Bryce Harper spurned them. This year, Shohei Ohtani. Last year, Carlos Correa and Aaron Judge.
Well, Carlos Correa said yes.
Carlos Correa said yes, and then they said no. Dusty Baker, he's coming home, baby. Dusty Baker has agreed to be a special assistant in the Giants front office. His third stint with the team. He lives in San Francisco in the offseason, and now he will live in San Francisco in the on-season. Dusty stepping down from his role with the Houston Astros. He will be a Hall of Famer. He is 74 years old. I'm curious like what he's actually going to be doing for the Giants besides like driving to the ballpark every once in a while and just being Dusty Baker. I don't think that they're sending him like reports. Hey, I said,
oh, his assistant baseball operations. I'm like, is homie watching, you know, draft video? Like, what are we talking about here? Like I am intrigued too by now. Let's be clear. Like maybe I'm wrong. And I'm sure when they ask Farhan about it, he'll be like, Dusty's a legend. We're excited to have him. Like, this is an ownership decision. Obviously, this is Larry Bear and whatever Giants ownership would be like, you know, it'd be cool if we have Dusty around. And they're probably right.
They're right.
And Dusty's already there. And so if Dusty wants to keep hanging out in baseball, then like, yeah, this is the least surprising thing ever.
He'll be at spring training one day and it'll be delightful. Yeah. And it'll mix up the monotony of spring training.
Way more interesting if it was like, Dusty's going to be Nick Kroll's assistant, you know, specialist.
With the Reds.
Like, whoa. Yeah. Or the Nats, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So. Oh, he's going to the Twins. Okay.
Right. Like, whoa. Dusty's actually going up to work for the Blue Jays. Okay. All right. I didn't see that coming.
The Kiwoom Heroes.
Yeah. Right. Can you believe it? He's actually heading over to be with the Rakuten Monkeys.
Get ready to learn Dusty, buddy.
Right. Oh my gosh. He's heading over to Taiwan. So anyway, until that happens, I'd love to see him make it do a little Lee Dome stint. He could Dusty needs to go manage in winter ball. Next time Lee Dome team starts, 1-6, you got to can them and bring Dusty down to San Pedro or whatever to right the ship in a Lee Dome. So that's really the one thing Dusty hasn't accomplished as a manager.
So is, Bob getting
the Lee Dome team back on track.
Bob Nightingale wrote, "The San Francisco Giants make one of the greatest free agent signings of the winter." Okay.
Okay, Bob.
We love Dusty. Is he more impactful? So, let's see who else the Giants have signed, right? Who has a larger impact
than Jung-Hoo Lee? I would say. Oh, or are you just saying for the Giants in particular, or just
the Giants acquired T.J. Hopkins from the Reds?
That's a good
who
one.
Who has a bigger impact on the Giants this year, T.J. Hopkins or Dusty Baker?
Man, I think we're going to have to track that.
Tom Murphy or Dusty Baker?
Oh, Tom Murphy for sure. That's not even close.
Okay.
Love Tom Murphy.
All right.
Speaking of free agency, Jake, let's bounce around a couple of names. Listen, we still have this pile of superstars at the top. We got Award. These guys are famous and expensive and represented by Scott Boras. We talked about Bellinger. We're going to talk about Snell, Montgomery, Hader, Chapman. Okay, we're going to get to them. But there's still a good number of free agent stuff. I will say that the middle tier has thinned out significantly, especially on the pitching side of things. But there are still some famous players that we are thinking about often, and we cannot find them homes. So we're just going to run through some names here. And we're not going to find the answers, but it's almost just like a reintroduction to be like, hey, remember that this guy also needs to find a team, presumably in the next month.
We're going to remember some current guys.
Yes, let's do it. Who should we?
Joey Votto. Remember him? There was a report from C. Trent at The Athletic about how Votto has three teams in on him. Three teams are sniffing around. Now, what does it mean to be in? Mm-hmm. Maybe they're in on him as we love his vibe. Mm-hmm. Are there teams in on him as a player? Mm-hmm. We're pretty sure that one of these three teams is the Blue Jays. That
we think
feels
so.
Pretty set.
We think so. And they had some quotes. Ross Atkins had some quotes earlier this offseason about we respect the hell out of Joey Votto. He was awesome, blah, 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 blah. Clearly was not top priority for them. Now, I believe Bob Nightingale is the one that reported three teams.
Oh, sorry about
Trent. Trent had basically a story talking to Joey, basically being like, hey, what's up? How are you? And it was basically Votto being like, I am ready. I will be ready for spring training, right? It's nothing too shocking, but his point being, he has a quote being like, listen, I know, once again, this is what he's been saying for the last year and a half. I know when I'm healthy, I can still be really good, particularly against right-handed pitching. Now, it's weird because the splits have kind of gone in the other direction over the last few years as he's kind of battled these injuries. But yeah, who needs, he's not a good first baseman anymore, right? So we're talking about likely a DH, maybe a platoon. His problem, and we can tie someone else in here, is that Brandon Bell is still available. And Brandon Bell just had a year where he demolished right-handed pitching. And no one's talking about him, and I don't really understand why he's completely off anyone's radar. But if you're looking for that role to be filled, even if you're still the Blue Jays, by the way, Brandon Belt is probably the better option, okay? As much as I love Joey Votto. And so that's his issue. So in the same way that a lot of the other guys are having to wait for other parts of the market, that's a very specific one that I imagine is blocking him from being available. If there are three teams available who are interested, who could you imagine else being interested in him?
Washington Nationals seems like a pretty straightforward fit. Mm-hmm. They don't really have a clear designated hitter right now. The Minnesota Twins smell like a bit of a fit for me, unless they really, really believe in Alex Kirilloff. I'm sure the Angels are calling and Joey knows enough to not pick up the phone.
But that's the bigger question about Joey's free agency in general is he willing to take a major league deal from anybody? We're going to find out.
Somewhere.
It seems like yes.
Yeah, there's probably a list somewhere that's ranked, it has doing math very quickly, 29 times 2 is 58 plus 1 is 59. So you take the Reds out, right? So there are minor league and major league deals from every team, and then there's retirement, and those are 59 options when you take out the Reds. And there's maybe a list in his brain to some extent that's would he take a minor league deal from one team over a major league deal from another team? Mm. Would he rather retire than take a major league
right,
deal
exactly.
from any of
the teams? That's a great.
We don't know.
Yeah. Like, is retirement, does retirement rank 20 or does retirement rank 30th? I guess is the question. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. is retirement above every minor league deal but below every major league deal? That's maybe the question. He seems very committed to playing. Arizona is another team I would mention who a lot they are rumored for maybe a bigger swing at someone like JD Martinez, which makes sense. But Joey can make a ton of sense there too. So yeah, we'll see. I hope he lands somewhere.
Harlem Hellfighters. We have a first baseman designated hitter combo entrenched on our 10U team, so we can't get Trey Votto.
Also, it's 10U, right? So
yeah, but he's 10 times four, so it's right. fine.
Okay, got it.
Other free agents, first base, Reese Hoskins. Haven't heard a whole lot. Seems like the Nats still a spot. The Cubs still a spot that makes sense. The Giants. Blue Jays make a little bit of sense. The Giants make some sense. Mm-hmm. Reese, I would imagine, is because he is Boris, he is not the number one priority for the Boris world right now. And I would be surprised if he goes before some of these other guys.
I actually disagree. I actually think that because we've seen Boris kind of knock off some of the next tier guys, and since positionally he's kind of in his own group
yeah,
among, I guess JD Martinez and him are both Boris, and they're probably looking at some of the similar teams. So in that sense, that probably complicates it a little bit. But I actually think he will get something before Snell. I think I've said this already. I think he's dragging Snell, Montgomery, Chapman into February. I really do. Whereas I think Reese is more likely to get something. But again, with him too, it's like we're probably talking about a DH. So in that sense, it maybe limits him. But it's a lot of the same teams we said for Votto, except teams that are probably more. I mean, Arizona, right? Why not? Like there are places that he obviously is going to want to go somewhere where he can hit and probably get a shorter term deal. And so in that sense, you might be thinking more ballpark than anything. So we'll see. Reese will get a new spot, and I'm excited to see where it is.
Gary Sanchez.
So we had, I mean, what is the catchers we've had? The largest catching signing we've had this offseason has been Victor Caratini and Tom Murphy, and Martín Maldonado, Jacob Stallings, Andrew Kisner.
So there are two obvious fits here for me.
Yeah, still the
and
Padres.
They are. No.
Why not?
Well, the Padres have Luis Camposano, and they just traded for Kyle Higashioka.
Oh, they traded for Higashioka. That's true. I mean, I guess I'm low on Camposano, but okay, fine. I still think they're an option, but who are the two for you?
The two obvious fits are the two teams in Florida. So the Tampa Bay Rays, who I'm skeptical will get Gary because of the emphasis they put on catcher defense. Gary was better last year than he had been, but still, I just can't. It's hard to see him with the Rays for that reason. However, their starter is Rene Pinto, who I believe has 60 career games or something in the big leagues, and their backup is Rob Brantley, who's an NRI. And so the Rays need to get another catcher before spring training. Mm-hmm. And so Gary is the best catcher available. That's I don't know
great,
if they'll pay for
call.
That.
Yeah.
The other one is the Marlins.
Yeah. That because- one is like. Now, again, that's a great example of like previous regime, even Kim Ng and the one before, like this would have already happened. I don't know if Peter Bendix is interested in getting in the Gary Sanchez business from that perspective. So yeah, but I don't know. The Nats are a weird one for a lot of guys. I know they obviously believe in Kaber, but...
The Tigers, I know Jake Rogers surprised
Jake
at like
Rogers
22
was,
homers
was
last
sneaky,
year.
Sneaky good. And I mean, honestly, dude, like the Pirates, I mean, we want to see Henry catching every day, but because they lost Andy Rodriguez for the whole season, that's another one that, again, I don't know how much money Gary's looking for, but I still think San Diego is a...
A lot of teams have catchers, also, Jordan.
Sorry to Camposano, but Gary and Higgy being reunited in San Diego would be very funny.
That is very funny. Let's move on. TA7. Tim Anderson was walloped to the ground so hard by Jose Ramirez into free agency off the White Sox roster. White Sox didn't trade him at the deadline because we all assumed they were going to pick up the team option for $16 million, and then they didn't. So now TA is hitting free agency at like the worst possible time. He, in my mind, he's worth a shot. Like, he's worth a bounce back shot. I think there's definitely stuff left in the tank. It's just a very bizarre fit because I don't think he can be a shortstop. I don't think teams see him as a shortstop defensively anymore.
And but it does seem that, like, he, you know, he played second base in the WBC. There's reporting that, like, he's fine. He'll play second. Obviously, he's also just looking for a guaranteed, you know, decent size, probably 1 year guarantee. Again, said the Nats. Milwaukee, I know they have Bryce Terang there, but, like, that's one where if you want a platoon and you are willing to give him a major league deal, I could see him kind of being an interesting roll of the dice in a lot of sense. Honestly, both Kansas City and Detroit, I think Detroit makes a good amount of sense if we're looking at kind of that level. Angels probably still would make a lot of sense, honestly. But it's hard. It's really hard to find someone there. I would, if Davis Schneider wasn't magically Babe Ruth last year, I would say Toronto also makes a ton of sense. But it's harder to find that spot for TA7. I hope he lands somewhere where it can be an interest. I guess maybe I was going to say Miami, but
the question is he going to get a starting spot, right? Like, he probably wants to play every day, and it's unclear if he's going to get that opportunity.
Yeah.
Ahmed Rosario kind of fits in the, like, same box as him.
Yeah, I agree. But also, like, he'll play at second every day, right? Like, if he's given the second base job, then he'll 100% do that, I think. But yeah. So any other guys before we get out of here? Again, we still have a lot of DH types. Obviously, Soler's at the top, but we still have Tommy Pham. Like, Tommy Pham was just really good. Like, I know he's a little bit older, but Tommy Pham and Justin Turner had a really good season. Like, these are a lot of DH types, not that many DH spots. So that's, I don't know where they all kind of shuffle through. Arizona's going to get one of them. But that's where I'm kind of struggling.
If I was a bad team, I would give Joey Gallo whatever he wanted, and I would let him rake up a storm for 2 months and then trade him.
Pop quiz, Joey Gallo's OPS plus this past year.
83. 101.
Wow. Yeah. He basically was exactly... Now, he only played 111 games. He was injured, 332 plate appearances. But he hit 21 home runs in 282 at-bats, 177, 301, 440. I mean, his strikeout rate was somehow a career high. 43%. But the power was still there, and he's still, like, an okay defender in multiple spots. Like, he kind of did exactly what you paid him to do. So I don't know where he fits, but
1 year, $10 million. Gary, Jock, Pham, Gallo, Justin Turner. I think Brandon Belt I would put above all those guys.
I think I'd still put Turner above them too.
Okay. So, but Belt,
okay,
then Turner.
Yep.
Gallo or Pham, 1 year, $10 million.
Still Pham, I think.
Okay.
Pham, yeah. Peterson
or Gallo. Peterson or Gallo.
I'm good. Million. The point is, I'm not out on Gallo. Who is it, Gallo or Gary, you said?
Gallo or Peterson, 1 year, $10 million.
Oh, man. I mean, Peterson's like a zero defensively at this point. But his underlying stuff was still really good. I'd still take Jock, I think.
And he's Jewish?
So that's anyway, all these 1 year deals are going to be very fun to compare. I do love, like, one of my favorite things of the offseason is when guys sign identical contracts, even if they're, like, completely different players. Like, for example, Mitch Garver and Kenta Maeda both signed 2 year $24 million, right? That makes sense. I don't know which one I'd rather. I mean, obviously for the Mariners, it made no sense to sign Kenta Maeda. But, like, there's, or like, I think, what was the other one? Oh, yeah, Seth Lugo and Jamer Candelario. 3 years, 45, right? Like, okay. That's interesting. You're not thinking about them in the same contractual terms. But all of these one-year guys, once these one-year deals start rolling in, because this is the bigger picture thing as we wrap up this podcast here, is, like, we're going to start getting whispers again about teams, whether it's collusion, whatever. Like, we've already seen some of this, but we haven't really talked about it. Players being like, what the fuck? Like, Kevin Kiermaier being like, I heard from zero teams. Like, okay. Like, we're going to start getting that as we get into February again, where players are like, what the hell? Teams aren't doing anything. What is this? And, like, that's how this business works. Last year we were throwing money around. Now we're going to get back into where they're like, no, I will not play ball with Scott Boras. I refuse. guess what? They will. They will.
That's just how the cookie eventually crumbles. We will get to some of those fun emails that we have in the tank later on this week.
Yes. We'll do that on Friday. Today's Tuesday. Wednesday, we'll have a Prospect Barbacast with Mike Farron covering mostly the international signing day, signing period, which opened on Monday, hitting some of the biggest names that signed, including another Vlad Jr. So we'll talk about that and many, many more.
But none of those folks have a podcast, so they don't count.
Oh, that's true. In terms of like their velocity. Yeah, no, that's true. Sorry to Branelli Franco, the top pitcher in this year's class. Unless he has a podcast, I know he throws harder than you. Yeah. We can factor him in. Otherwise, email us, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We'll get to some more of those emails in the near future. So thank you all for supporting us. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing, as always. We appreciate you, producer Chris. And we'll be back tomorrow with Mike Farron, and on Friday, me and Jake Mintz, 99th percentile podcast philosophy. Woo. Goodbye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.